So one of the things that we have been doing very well over the last, I would say, almost year has been to really qualify a customer upfront in the pre-sales process so that we're asking those types of questions early on, and our delivery team members are a part of that engagement. And so we go in and can quickly see that yes, there are established processes, they've been doing the work necessary to do it, or they're not.
Welcome back to Tech Lunch, a podcast to help you feel less stressed and more focused to calm the chaos of consulting. Let's be inspired by the possibility that we can be happier by doing less in an industry obsessed with constant optimization. I'm your host, April Rest. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Welcome back, everybody, to the Tech Less podcast. I'm your host, April Rest, and today we're here with Alana Steffens, who's the managing director with Attain Partners, serving as the Salesforce implementation capability lead for Attain Digital. She provides customer relationship management solutions to higher education and nonprofit clients. She has 7 Salesforce certifications and also participates in Attain Partners coaching and mentorship program. Mama of 3 and wife to a former colleague of mine. So, so glad that we're connected in this way and that you're willing to come on the show, Alana. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, April, for having me. It was quite the honor to be asked and really looking forward to digging in to see how I can help others who might be trying to evaluate the consulting space and or just tech in general.
Thank you. Yeah. So let's dive in. You've got over 15 years experience in the consulting world, helping organizations improve their processes by applying tech. Throughout all of your experience, what have you found to be the major challenges in seeing success with these kinds of projects?
Yeah, that's a really great question, and I'm glad you asked it. We've worked with so many different types of organizations that come into an engagement at different levels of maturity. And I think that that speaks strongly to what can support a really strong outcome and or where you could have some more bumps along the way to eventual successful outcome, but certainly a longer road. I think one of the big things that organizations, when you're talking about implementing a CRM, is forget the technology. Let's talk strategy first. You know, what are the goals? What are the outcomes that the organization is trying to achieve by moving into this technology space? It's also important to understand, you know, successful outcome, who's driving the initiative? Is this an IT-led initiative? Is this a business or a functional area-led initiative? And who's sponsoring this? Do we have proper sponsorship from the top to ensure that when we get into those moments, forest through the trees, that we have someone that can elevate us up, remind us again, you know, what are the outcomes that we're attempting to have at the end of this and be a guiding light. I think, you know, if you're missing those three pieces heading into any type of technology, whether it's CRM, ERP, or otherwise, you're going to be setting yourself up for a lot harder journey. So I think that, you know, CRM, I've seen that is, I use those, forget technology at first, the technology comes later. And then I would say also just processes. Organizations who understand themselves, organizations who understand how we want to operate. You know, many times I'll get into client discussions and their question to me is, well, just tell us how the tool wants us to do it. I love that one. I said, well, you know, especially with Salesforce, we're building on a platform. It can bake cookies by Friday. It takes time and money. But more importantly, it needs to understand, do I mix the chocolate chips in first or does that go last? Am I putting pecans? Like what's happening? And so I use that analogy with organizations to really stress the importance of process. You know, with Attain Partners, one of the things that we also get our customers saying is, well, what's best in class? What is industry? Oh, hi. I have some friends who are trying to join.
Hi.
Can I go to Asher's house?
Yes, after 3 o'clock, we can go to Asher's house.
It's going to take a long time.
Oh, hi,
Yeah.
sweetie.
Do I do it at 1 o'clock?
No.
Like,
Sorry, one
can you
second.
go?
All good, all good. Just taking a pause here so that we can bear witness to some family time, because that's so important in life and tech, is knowing what matters to you.
All right, there we go. Sorry about that.
It's
All
all
right.
good. What were we talking about? We were talking
Yeah,
about
theoretically.
processes and
Process.
baking cookies.
Yes, pastries. Yeah, so I like to use that analogy with my clients, and it really helps them to understand, what is it that we need to be thinking through. And for a lot of organizations, that can be really challenging. There's organizations that they don't want to put a stake in the sand to say, this is how we're going to do it. They, looking at us and we're coming in as IT consultants, and they're asking us, what should our strategy be? And so those are different types of engagements. Those are engagements where we certainly have the professionals that can come in and speak to the best practices for running your fundraising. We have the strategic folks on the team that can come in and tell you how enrollment and admissions should occur. But knowing that upfront, sometimes it doesn't come out until you get into the engagement, and it becomes very clear that that customer hasn't thought through those pieces. And so implementing the technology becomes a lot more challenging because now we need to augment a different way of thinking about the project, to again have that successful outcome that they're looking for.
And when that occurs, so I'm just gonna pull it out a little bit for our listeners here. Like, I've experienced this where the client, our SAL is one thing, our SAL might be more technology focused. And while we have the goals in there for the business outcomes, there's an underlying assumption that the business understands their own process. And so when we get into the situation where, for me as a project manager, I come to the conclusion early on in discovery that the client, in fact, doesn't understand their business process. They might not even have a process, and they're really looking to us to share the best in class or share the insights from our other clients and what they're doing within that sector. As a PM, it's like, that's like,
Super frustrated.
it's so needed, but
Yeah.
that's not what the expectations were with timeline, budget, scope. And
Absolutely.
so I'm curious, with your experience, how do you handle that when that comes up? How do you navigate that with your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that we have been doing very well over the last, I would say, almost year has been to really qualify a customer upfront in the pre-sales process so that we're asking those types of questions early on, and our delivery team members are a part of that engagement. And so we go in and can quickly see that yes, there are established processes, they've been doing the work necessary to do it, or they're not. I think process is just one piece of it We very much address things as people, process, technology. And so it applies to the people dynamic as well. We think about change management on is this team, is this organization, institution ready to embrace the amount of change that is about to be hold to them? And what do we need to do to prepare? Because I think that also goes along with process and is the assumption that the teams are equipped and ready. You know, oh, there's this beautiful technology solution, and suddenly, you know, we trained you, and they're deer in headlights going, we have to use this. How does this apply to process? Right. So they go kind of hand in hand. And so we've been able to establish upfront with them, here's what you're going to need to be successful in this implementation. Now, that sounds simple. It's not always that way. You know, there's going to be folks that we're working with in the pre-sales process that kind of throw it over the wall, right, to a project team on the client side to say, okay, good luck, off you go, and what's going on? And so that also sheds some light internally on what's the communication process and the transparency for these projects that have been deemed necessary for the organization, and folks get pulled along kind of after the fact. Now, getting into those instances where that prep work hadn't been done, and where we weren't able to get some of those pieces going, then it's having that conversation, having the sponsor, right, to sit down and have that level of escalation to say, look, if we're going to be successful together, then this is what this, if we're going to be successful together, then this is something that we need to address. You know, we have got very tactical with our wording, quite frankly, in our statements of work. If we haven't been able to have that conversation to say, we're going to document your current state processes. We're going to, you know, there's assumptions, right, that come along these paths. And we're assuming that you all are doing the work that's going to be necessary to document future state. If you are needing support for your future facing, we're going to apply best practices. That's not to say we won't apply best practices, but if you're looking for help in informing and documenting what the future state process should be, that's either they're included or not included. And we're very transparent. Now, you have to be. And it applies to change management. We've actually found that there's organizations that have a very different takeaway on what change management means. And at Attain Partners, our practitioners are ProCyte certified. And so that takes on a very specific meaning for what does change management mean, where some organizations think, oh, that's just training. I'm like, oh, no. It's more than that. And so we're learning from those and incorporating it back again to that qualifying mechanism. I had a school recently that they thought change management was our team coming in and writing all of their processes and procedures. I'm like, oh, nope.
I've seen a lot of the gamut between just training and exactly what you've mentioned, where they wanted us to write their SOPs.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, and again, right, it's expectation setting. So how you get about it is going to vary from instance to instance. I think expectation setting upfront and often. I also think being able to have those challenging conversations where you're coming at it and it's very clear there's misalignment. Misalignment, it's okay, and it's going to happen. I think making it known that these are going to be instances that occur, but being able to have that frank conversation with the client or even your own internal team when it's like, wait, y'all did what? That wasn't part of the scope, right? But to come forward to the table and say, hey, here's what transpired, water under the bridge, how are we going to move forward together to ensure that yes, we are all on the same page. And sometimes those conversations are they're fine, but oftentimes they're not. You might have an upset customer coming to you saying, "Oh my gosh, that's why we decided to move forward with your organization to, you know, lead us to the path of redemption." I think I had someone tell me one time, and you know, it's clear that that was not what's written in this. And right, so again, having that conversation, putting out steps. It's a mitigation plan. Put your project manager hat on. What's the mitigation plan once that misalignment is identified and known, and then moving forward together. But definitely upfront steps that can happen to prevent that, to set those proper expectations.
We love the pre-sales cycle as project managers. We're like, come on, please include delivery.
Well, and I love that. I mean, as a management consulting firm at heart, it's very much a seller doer model. And so our delivery team members, you know, obviously depending where you are In our performance management, we have tracks and levels. It's an expectation in your performance goals for qualitative metrics that you are supporting that process. So we believe it, and it's for the reasons that you just mentioned that get us into trouble down the road if it is purely a throw it over the wall situation from sales to delivery. It doesn't work. It doesn't work.
Does that. You mentioned something that piqued my interest, and it was about having an executive sponsor on the client side who can help bring everybody back up high level as like a North Star. Do you have ways that you assess, how do I want to phrase this? Are there qualities, maybe qualities or characteristics of that exec sponsor, or of like what a successful executive sponsor
Looks like.
looks like?
Yeah. So I would say an effective executive sponsor is going to be somebody that can cooler heads prevail and so can be that very just objective individual that can come in and say, these were the agenda items, this was the objective of this project. Taking to them decisions that need to be made when it's clear we're at an impasse at the project level. I think this individual has to be bought in, right? They're your topmost cheerleader too. And so that person needs to reflect those qualities of a leader, right? No waffling, no indecisiveness, very clear on this decision is being made and we're going to move forward. I think another characteristic that I've seen with effective executive sponsors is they know the organization and they've worked in other projects before where this isn't their first rodeo, right? But they're looking at the bigger picture, and can stay apprised of what's happening and move things forward. I think when I see ineffective executive sponsors are those ones that like to call, and this is a phrase I heard recently, it's a swoop and a poop. They
Oh
come in and they go down and they're like, ah, what's going on? And they want to be in the weeds. And it's like, no, I need you at the higher level, right? There's trust there with the teams. And so, when those situations occur, we deal with it. But certainly it's not somebody that's in the day-to-day, and they shouldn't be, because that's where you get mired down sometimes. And I see it internally with our teams too. You get so passionate
no.
about what the team is doing day in and day out that it's sometimes hard to pull everybody up and again reflect, what is the reason we're doing this overall? It's not so, Nancy has an easier job entering gifts. It's not so that, we can run less reports. No, it's the overall objective is so that in that example, we can raise more fundraising dollars to make a larger impact for the mission that this organization is trying to achieve, right? So that
Right.
executive sponsor is somebody that can continue to elevate folks up and remind when they need to, and then make decisions to support that.
This is so fun. I love talking about all of these things.
Yeah. That's what we do every day, right?
Seriously. So we've talked a lot about the client's maturity, their readiness, the pre-sale cycle. What challenges do you see come up throughout, let's say, execution of the project?
Yeah. Again, I think expectation setting, when there is a lack of it, regardless of what work stream you're in, there's going to be challenges. Clear communication goes hand in hand with the expectation setting. Making sure that folks are clear on roles and responsibilities. When I find that it's unclear, it's a challenge. Do I have an individual who isn't staying in their lane with the role that was assumed, right? No assumptions. So document those. And who's kind of going all over the place? Do I have someone who's floundering because they're not clear which lane they're supposed to be in? Right. I think that's really critical and important. I think when we're engaging with clients, there has to be some form of, you form the team, you're storming the team. And so how do you quickly get to forming because you have a 12-week agenda ready, set, go. I think other bumps along the way that I've seen oftentimes also revolve around folks who may have less experience being tasked with something that they decide, I've got to show my competence. And so I'm going to burn a million hours figuring it out before I ask for help. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I'm nodding because that was totally me my first
Yeah.
few years.
I mean, those
Totally.
moments where it's a, we had 10 hours, we assumed and estimated to do this task, and you're telling me at 12 hours that it's still not done. Right. And I think that as consultants, there's often this, and I struggle with this too. I've been called out on, you don't ask for help. And I'm like, well, but I want to figure it out. And right. So there's finding that balance of how far do I take it to try to figure out on my own? Because naturally I want you to be curious. I want you to go out. I want you to try and figure it out on your own. But certainly knowing at what point do I need to rely on my safety net? We have a whole team of folks that can answer and support and guide. But you need to come to the table with a, here's some things I've tried. Because I also see it in the reverse, which is there's an aspect of I'll say utilizing your time, but no productivity behind it, right? And so it's a, I was waiting. Like, well, what do you mean waiting? Or well, I've never done this before. We have to be one Google search ahead of our customers. I know that's
Right.
terrible,
Right.
right? Or at least 10 searches, but at least at a minimum, one Google
At
search
minimum
ahead.
one.
And in the Salesforce space, there things are changing 3 times a year at a minimum, let alone all the ISV vendors that we work with, right, on their packages. And so there's always going to be something new. And I find that within an implementation or an engagement, that sometimes that can be really challenging for the teams to decipher, I'm learning something new while I'm moving a client forward. And if I get stuck, at what point do I ask for help? And I always like to say, you have a team, right? I'd rather you ask ahead of time and have your coach or your mentor, the more senior person on the project, tell you, keep trying and come back to me in the morning, right? Versus a, oh my gosh, now I've got to go have a hard conversation as the project manager with the client because you've burned through half of the build budget and we're only a quarter of the way done. Right. So I make sure that we have those conversations with the team. These are the situations we want to prevent. But it's definitely a learning moment for lots of folks coming into consulting.
For sure. I even experienced that. I remember my very first project. We went live and there was a minor issue with security. And I think I spent 4 hours trying to fix it and I still didn't have it fixed. And then our senior consultant knew what was wrong in 5 minutes.
Right.
And I billed for it. And then my project manager was like, we can't, April, like, we can't bill when you've gone off and like have just tried to fix it yourself in silo. Like that's like we can't bill that back to the client. That doesn't make sense. And I did, I had no understanding, which is why now as a PM, I feel very passionate of like, let's make sure we set expectations internally on like how we're gonna go about our work. And to your point of that balance of like, I don't like, I really don't wanna hear that you're 2 hours over and you still haven't figured it out because that indicates that at some point along the way, we didn't have the expectation, the shared expectation that you were going to keep me in the loop of any challenges. And I think as a PM, like that's my responsibility to set an environment where people feel safe to come and say, like, hey, I know this was only supposed to be 10 hours. I'm 7 hours way through and I still don't know what I'm supposed to be doing here. I can't figure it out. I'd much rather have someone come earlier on and ask for help than have it be after the fact.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, and I
So.
know that you said providing that safe space for folks to be able to learn and grow. In the consulting business, I use the word leverage. You can't rely on your rock star unicorn folks who are very senior, very seasoned, very skilled to do all of the things. That doesn't make sense. And it
Exactly.
also doesn't provide opportunities for folks with less experience to come in and grow their career, right? So I think, it's great having that those coaching and mentoring opportunities and moments, providing that safe space where they can grow and learn. Early on in my career, I remember we call it ghosting hours, right? You're like, I just have to figure it out, and I'm gonna be regarded as incompetent if I don't. And then having somebody be like, no, it's okay. Like you gave it as much effort as we would have expected. Now come and ask for help so we can help get you across the finish line. You'll learn. I get to coach and mentor. The client's not upset because we didn't burn through all of their budget, right? Like all the things coming together. I think going back to your original question, one thing that has come very clear in the last couple of years for me, I didn't come out of industry for the industries I'm serving. I came from a very technical background. I started off at Northrop Grumman doing software engineering. I went to work at Verizon Business doing some business analyst stuff, and then eventually to ACF to do a Salesforce implementation consulting. I find there are individuals that we will bring into the teams that do come from industry, who know what it's like to work at a nonprofit, who know what it's like to work within academia, and they get into an implementation and they start to assimilate with the client and their needs, going, well, if I don't do this for them and go the extra mile and work overtime and do the best absolutely for them, they start to lose track of the identity of we're the consultant beholden to a statement of work, and what we're doing for them, which feels like a freebie, free puppies still bite. And making it known that while, yes, in the spirit of doing what you felt was right for the client, we didn't give them an opportunity to really ensure that that thing really was the thing that we should have done that took us over budget. Because that can come back later and the client says, well, I didn't agree to that. I didn't authorize for you to do that. If we would have known it was going to cost more money, we needed to be given a chance to say thanks, but no thanks. Or yes, that's a great idea. Is that in budget? Project managers say, well, no, it's not, right? Okay, well, let's add some extra budget so that we can go ahead and do that. And I find that the intent is always good, always good. It's always genuine, but it always comes back to bite you in some way that you just didn't expect. And that can leave the consultant feeling, very resentful of, but I was just trying to do the right thing. And so that's been some consulting skill set that I have seen folks just coming from all aspects of life needing to just remind them of why we need to approach this collaboratively and not making those decisions in a vacuum.
Yeah, that's really helpful and hopefully helpful for some of our listeners out there. Because I think, like, part of why I wanted to start this podcast is yes, help people feel less alone with kind of some of the silent struggles I think a lot of us face, regardless of industry, with integrating work and life, with mental health. But the other part of it is, we can indirectly impact portions of that by learning how to become better consultants.
Absolutely,
But,
absolutely.
by understanding the consulting model, by understanding like we are beholden to our statement of work in most cases. There's some engagements lately I've been on where they're so large and so ambiguous. So much ambiguity.
Ambiguous, you got it.
Where, the sow is more of like a North Star with a lot of flexibility in it. But I think like your point, bringing it back to your point of, free puppies still bite. I lost my train of thought. Where I wanted to go with it was just, I don't know. I lost my train of thought. It was something that you said that came to me around, like, maybe just the whole like the holistic picture, if you
Yeah, but maybe
will.
how do they know that it's out of scope, especially if it's a statement of work that is so ambiguous? I like to make sure that there's a realm of flexibility in our statements of work for the how, right? But the what should still be identified. What is it that we are expected to achieve an outcome? In Salesforce, there's six ways to do one thing, and it's up to us as consultants to identify and lead the client to what is the best way now that we know your organization, now that we understand your processes. And sometimes that can dive down into a situation where our team goes back and forth, as an example, up to seven flows, up to three Omni Studio templates, up to, right? And the list goes on. And sometimes the delivery teams were still in that mode of like, what makes the most sense? The delivery team's like, look, I can crank out 15 flows in the same amount of time that you estimated, what you thought would take me seven, right? And so we try to make sure that there's enough flexibility in there to protect ourselves, because at the end of the day, we know that automations and reporting and certain marketing cloud aspects can really just blow the budget. And so it is going back and evaluating where have lessons learned, how do we incorporate that into a statement out of work without completely handcuffing the delivery team and the ability to deliver on the what. And so that is a perfect example. I had one guy working for us long ago, and the statement of work indicated a preference center. I'm getting escalated by the project manager. I'm calling, okay, what's going on? We now have three preference centers. Like, urch. What happened? Whoa, right? And this poor individual, he's like, but that's what they needed. I was like, well, okay. And right, that's an opportunity to say, hey, customer, it's all about progressive elaboration, right? As we continue to work with these clients, we learn more. New information will be known, new information will be shared. And we need to be able to act on that together. And I think sometimes consultants that are coming in who are just focused on the tech, again, back to that consulting 101, ensuring that they're clear on what is this scope, ensuring they're clear on, hey, what was the assumed estimate of effort to be able to address this particular area so that they can start to learn to be mindful when they're putting together a design that it's not going to vastly exceed what was assumed to be the level of work. And that's a conversation, right? Go back to the client to say, hey, we thought it was going to be this many hours, or we thought it was going to be this amount of effort. It's now coming clear that it's not. And providing options, right? Providing options. I think back to the free puppies still bite. I think sometimes our consultants will they'll just pick what they think is the best option, but they won't consult or collaborate with the client to ensure that that client is part of the decision-making process. And so really critical to make sure that that happens, because they need to understand the impact of their decision. And when we make that decision on their behalf, they don't get a chance to say, yes, I'm okay with the impact that you're telling me, whether that's scope, schedule, or budget.
And I think going back to the collaboration, it gives the client the opportunity to really evaluate, is it worth the effort? Is that right? Like
Is it
we
a
can
feature we can live without? It
right.
might be.
And I would think too, because some of our listeners aren't in consulting, and I still think this framework, for lack of a better phrase, applies, because the last few years I've done a lot more staff augmentation, where I might be coming in as a PM, but I'm working with an in-house team and they're serving internal customers. And one thing I've noticed is that a lot of times, this mindset you're talking about of like wanting to serve their customers and seeing something they think might be beneficial, and then just going ahead and doing it. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, while we might not have a SAO or even a lot of these cases, there's not even a project charter. And that was something that was, I digress, but that was part of the process of helping them with. But the point being, when a project gets approved, it's getting approved because there is the assumption that the effort it takes is going to be worth the outcome we're working towards achieving. And when we get into these situations, we might be so focused on, well, Nancy would really benefit if I did X, Y, or Z. But is that 5 grand, like, is that really worth, like, is there, are they going to see a return on that effort or return on that investment? And that's not our decision to make, whether we're a consultant or whether we're in-house as an engineer. That's not our decision. That needs to get escalated and discussed if that's really worthwhile.
Absolutely. Or, hey, look, we can do the 5 grand option. Here's the no cost option. Here's the manual option, right? Like it's presenting them with multiples and ensuring, as you said, that the project sponsor, which may need to include an executive sponsor, sometimes they're different people, have the say. Because at the end of the day, they're the ones that are responsible for the outward success of this project within their own organizations.
I want to pivot a little bit
Sure.
because I'm really curious. You're managing director and you've had, like, on paper what I think society would deem as this, like, fantastic career trajectory. And you're also a mom of three, and I'm sure you have other interests and passions outside of being a mom and outside of being a managing director. Can you talk to us a little bit about what managing all of that looks like, and, like, your take on work-life balance slash life-work integration?
Yeah, absolutely. So I live and breathe by a routine. Anytime I get into a moment of like, who moved my cheese, it's hard, right? So having self-awareness when you get into that to say, okay, what's going to upset my apple cart and what do I know is going to work, I think is really important. I think, you have to prioritize yourself, and that sounds so greedy and so selfish. But at the end of the day, if you're not taking care of yourself, if you're not working out, if you're not, paying attention to your diet and exercise, it's impacted me for sure. And so that plays into mental health as well. And I was going through a moment back in the fall where anxiety was a thing and I wasn't taking care of myself to address it. And so I couldn't show up as the mom that I wanted to be, as the wife I wanted to be, as the employee that I wanted to be. So you really got to make sure to prioritize that. I walk every day. Like that's just the thing. I go out. There's times where I let my coworkers know, hey, I'm gonna walk and talk if that's okay with you. I'm not gonna be on camera. And most of the times folks are like, yeah, that's great. Let's do that. Right. So finding ways to integrate it. My family recently relocated to a new state and I don't have my standing desk anymore. So I need to work on that. But I think that's really important. I hear the word balance and I had a friend that said that's baloney. That's total garbage. There's no such thing as balance. It's going to change every day. I think maintaining flexibility to ensure that you can pivot when you need to and pivot quickly is critical as well. And I think that, back to the routine, setting expectations, right, with yourself. There's going to be moments where you're working more than that 40 hours a week. There's moments where, sorry guys, like that is it because I've got this kid over here, I've got a family thing going on. And having grace through the whole thing, right? I think there's a dynamic of, whatever thing you might believe in, higher power, spirit, you insert thing here, I think is important too. And for me, it's very much a you can only control what you can control. You got to stop worrying about things that you literally have no control over and kind of letting that go. And so, however, you need to do that, you do that, right? And you can't feel guilty and you by not being able to change the outcome for things that are beyond your control. You can't let it get yourself worked up. I find that when I was earlier in my career, and I see this now with some folks on our team, they're so passionate about what they do. They just get so worked up and like, but I care and I want to do the thing. And you're like, okay, well, let's take a step back and let's kind of bifurcate that into some sections here to identify what can you control, right? What can you raise a red flag to someone who maybe is in control of that thing? But at the end of the day, right, you got to be okay with the decisions that you've made, and for the decisions that you can't make because there's none to make because it's out of your control. Let it go. So that really grounds me. So, you know, back to making sure that my health is taken care of both physically and mentally, making sure that my kids are good, right? My husband is a huge rock star, cornerstone to my ability to be able to take on the job that I have. And it goes both to work and at home. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't be afraid to ask for help and really evaluate to say, okay, well, what would make this easier? You know, someone once told me, automate your life. I'm like, oh, what do you mean? I think it was a TED talk. And I was like, no, you need to automate your life. Things, you know, why should you be doing grocery shopping if you're traveling and you've got a trip coming up and like, Instacart it, right? And if you don't have the means to do that, then maybe it's sitting down on Sunday and planning, right? That saves us a lot of headache and grief. Again, back to that routine, just sitting down and saying, okay, you know, here's what we need to do. Meal planning, meal prepping, it helps us to get through the week because by the time 6 o'clock rolls around and the kids are, you know, they're now home, it's starting to the routine. We've got homework. We've got sports. We've got, did everybody eat something? And
Hey,
please not
okay.
just, you know, go for some protein and not just all the snacks you found in the cabinet. Because they're like, I'm not hungry. I'm like, okay, Belvita bars are good, but that's not dinner. And so making sure that that's all taken care of. And so, you know, automating your life, even calendaring, right? Making sure that the calendaring is key. It goes back to managing expectations, whether that's with my employer or with my spouse, to say, hey, I'm traveling, or hey, I can't, or these are events that are upcoming. My husband and I have a Google Calendar, and it takes some dedication to sit down and say, all right, from now until the end of the year, what is happening? So let's start with the school schedule, let's start with the sports schedule, and making sure that we've got multiple places. And ensuring that folks are where they need to be. And the last thing I think I'll state with that, and I used to get so angry when people would tell me this, lower your expectations. If you don't have expectations, you can't be disappointed. And I'm like, but what do you mean? Like, no, I expect that my spouse is going to help with all the chores and that they're just gonna do the cooking and they're gonna make sure that the kids are where they need to be and they're gonna fully support me and my career and my role. And you know, well, at work, well, I would expect that my team is gonna show up and they're gonna do X, Y, and Z. And you know, there's this dynamic where yes, they have responsibilities, but if you don't sit down and talk about, you know, what does that look like? And you're just expecting it and not having that conversation and not being transparent and not communicating, you start to resent because your expectations aren't being met. And you need to make sure that everyone is on the same page in that regard. So it goes back to kind of leaving the things that are out of your control, lowering your expectations, which is not, again, I struggle with this, but it's not to say that you shouldn't have high standards. Right. But sometimes lowering your expectations are going to support you in that because then you can't be disappointed when things have to pivot or change. And, you know, the kids didn't get a bath tonight. Okay. They're still here. We kept them
I'll
alive.
survive.
High five.
Exactly.
Right. So I think that's really critical. And having those hard conversations, whether that's at work or at home, are ones that you just have to do.
So I'm curious with like calling BS on the balance of work life, like
Yeah.
what does the difference mean to you between the balance versus integrating that?
Yeah. For me, I just, when you talk about balance, there's, I think, this artificial connotation that you should have this 50-50 split, 70-30, and it should be consistent all the time. And life ebbs and flows. You know, there's moments where, you know, I had to get real with myself. Was I working to avoid situations happening at home? Yeah. And coming back to say, you know, Well, I need to make sure that, because sometimes routine can be conflated with balance too, and I don't want to suggest that that's the case at all for what I'm trying to describe. But for me, having balance would mean that there's an expectation that I always am going to work the 8 hours a day, that there's always going to be a meal plan prep ready to go, that there's always going to be gas in the car by Friday so I can get to work on Monday, right? And so when you talk about balance in that way, life is unpredictable, right? And it goes back to you can't control the things you can't control. And for me, balance assumes a level of control of everything, which I don't think is accurate for
No.
anything.
And you've just sparked something in my brain. There's someone I follow on LinkedIn. Their name is Pai Moon Lim. I'm probably
Okay.
not doing the name justice, but they depict a lot of like insights and lessons in consulting with cartoons.
Okay.
And I saw one recently where they were talking about glass balls versus rubber balls. So essentially, like priorities in our lives, what are the things that if we drop them, they'll shatter? What are the things if we drop them, they'll bounce back? And so identifying, like for me or for us, like, okay, well, what are my glass balls and what are my rubber balls? And then they take it a step further of, if you're in a period of your life where it's really tough to keep any of the balls from falling, what is something that we can do to reinforce the glass ball, to like wrap it in tape or wrap it in bubble wrap? Or like, what can we do to kind of give it a temporary reinforcement until we get to the place where we have the space or the energy to really give the glass balls the focus and the attention that they need. And I just love this image in my brain because it really puts into perspective for me, like, okay, was that really worth working late that night and I missed hanging out with my nieces? Like, I don't think so.
It's okay. Oh, I mean, right here. He brought me all of his Lego toys.
I love that. Oh my gosh. So
That's
fun.
good. Yes, bud.
Hi. Is there, can I watch on your phone?
There you go.
So cute. Oh my
There
gosh.
you go.
Is this
Yeah,
the
he's
4-year-old? Is
good.
this the soccer player?
Well, he's one of the, you gotta go that way. He's one of the
I'm
ones.
going to the couch.
Okay.
I'm going to this.
So it's one of those things with balance, and you got three kids, and you definitely have to make sure that you've got the right level of attention for them. There was a graphic I saw this morning similar to the glass balls, which is if you only marginally pay attention to your kids in those moments where they need that dedication, but you have full attention when they act up, guess what? Right, they're gonna start to act up because that's when they get your attention. So, I've been very intentional with that manner. I think with the kids, it was really fun too. You learn their love languages. There's that book, What's Your Love Language? And I think it was critical. It's, part of just being self-aware to understand kind of back to the expectation setting and lowering the bar and matching with a spouse in a way that you understand how they approach things. It's the same with the kids. And so certainly understanding that with them has been great, for the relationship that we have. And we're not perfect. We're learning. I said to my oldest daughter, she'll be 12 here coming up in July. Look, we were learning as we go. We're flying the plane as we're building it. And, she, as I got through the third one, definitely become much more aware of things that work, things that don't. And going back to just giving yourself grace and making sure that your kids they know they're loved. They know that they're here, and making it fun for them, incorporating them into some of those decisions, meal planning and things like that to keep the family moving. So that is definitely how we do that. But back to the balls, right? I think that's a great example on, what if you need to just back off on that for a minute, it goes back to asking for help. right? Maybe there's externally something out there that can support you through this period or this season of life where you just need some extra support, and that's okay. You haven't failed. You just need a little reinforcement.
Lovely. Well, I like to ask everybody on the show if they have a favorite quote, and if so, what is it? Do you have
Yeah, you know, I
one?
use this quote with a client. I thought I was going to get fired, but it applies to life. And I hear myself saying it in my brain a lot of times when I'm rushing around. And that quote is, if you want it real bad, you'll get it real bad. And haste makes waste. Those are two of my favorites. I use them all the time. You know, if you want it real bad, you'll get it real bad. I came in and this customer, the statement of work was supposed to be for 6 months. We get there for discovery and they're like, no, we actually meant 6 weeks. And I was like, oh, what you're asking for, I'm not even sure I could get a MVP up in 6 weeks for what is needed. And the individual looked at me and I'm like, I'm dead. I'm done. They're gonna call, they're gonna vote me off this project. That was in 2017, and we are still going strong with them as a customer. So love that. We still recall that. And then haste makes waste. I mean, yes, you have to move quickly and you have to pivot and be decisive, but there are moments where some of these bigger decisions, let's think through it, let's be intentional, let's not just, you know, jam it in because we needed to jam it in. And you know, in the home life, I'm running around, I'm getting stuff going, I've got picking up socks, I'm picking up shoes, I'm picking up physically glass water bottles, I'm picking up all the things, and then bam, I drop everything because I'm running around and I should have just gone and done a handful of things at once. It reminds me where you slam your hand in the door because you're right, or anything that if you just would have slowed down, be a little more intentional, would prevent an accident, prevent rework, prevent the, you know, ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure kind of mentality. So I love those quotes. I live by them.
I just heard them, Dad. I love them too. First time hearing both of them.
Awesome.
And I like that. So thank you. I'm always learning something new. Well, good. Well, thank you so much for spending part of your Saturday with us.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me. And definitely this has been fun for me. I love to support others as they're going through their journey, because you're right. Folks aren't alone. You know, I reminded myself as my daughter's now middle school, and there's a little bit of drama going on with some friends. And you know, I said, look, Taylor, I wish somebody would have told me this earlier on in my life, which is everyone at the end of the day, they're kind of focused on themselves and what other people think of them. And I said, once you can accept that, you know, then it kind of becomes less of what do other people think of me. And she's like, oh, okay, right? And being able to kind of just let it go. And you know, I think that that's really critically important. But going back to how do we support each other through this journey, I think that's the first step is you're not alone. There's somebody there that has been through what you've been through or currently going through it at the same time. And there's always going to be folks who are willing and wanting to support and foster growth and development for those folks. And I know I appreciate it. So hopefully this helps someone out there. And if there's any disagreements, I would love to have a hearty conversation for sure. I always like to learn. I like to surround myself with folks that can also influence, you know, my way of thinking going forward for the better.
Yeah. And where can people learn more about you?
Yeah, so LinkedIn is probably kind of one of the best places for it. I also there's our company website. We've got some information up on there. But certainly reaching out through LinkedIn, would love to have conversations with folks, and probably the easiest way to get in touch with me.
And that's Alana Steffens.
Yep.
Just straight up. Okay. And then for anyone out there interested in learning more about a team, where can they
Yeah,
do that?
so you can look us up. LinkedIn is also a great place, but attainpartners.com is our
Wonderful.
website.
We'll throw that in the show notes just so people can check
Yeah.
out anything either way. Awesome.
Well, I appreciate it, April. I hope you have a good
Thank
rest of your
you.
weekend here. I know it's getting warmer. It's 50 degrees. I'll take it. I know you're in
Oh
Florida.
my gosh.
Nice and warm.